Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker, and mental health consultant. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. We invite your calls and story to 781-3875. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. How was the Live Oak experience for you?
It was really fun. It was a lot of fun. Spend Father's Day down there with my dad and with my son.
And so did he enjoy the music? Was he grooving at 3.5 months?
Yeah. Well, he was sleeping almost the whole day.
That's a really good day.
Yeah. We carried him around in his little backpack carrier. He's on the front of us, and he pretty much sleeps every time he's in that. So he was in that almost all day and slept almost all day.
Oh, I'm happy for you. What a great Sunday.
Yeah, it was fun.
I'm so glad. I had Sunday was Cal Poly's graduation, and I always look forward to that because I teach in the psychology and child development department. And I look forward to that day every year to see students that I taught over the last few years come through, and they're getting ready to set out on their journey. And you know, it's that bittersweet moment of, oh, I really loved having you in my class, but yay, you get to take off and do your thing. So I want to say goodbye to any of my poly students that are still packing up and heading out. But I get the feeling that they were not hanging around after graduation.
Yeah, town got really empty all of a sudden
it yesterday. Did it got quiet very quickly everywhere on the Central Coast. So but that was my big weekend, and my husband and daughter went camping on the boat. It's not really meant for camping, but they somehow took the lawn chair pads and laid them out and slept in it. So they had a great time out in Morro Bay. It was beautiful. So the weekend was really a success. Now we're back to life as it is. Summer vacation, everything is different at our house because our schedules are all in disarray. And my daughter has her first job, and my husband's working many hours. And so we're taking off this afternoon, my daughter Kelly and I, and doing a road trip.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Mom and daughter road trip. Well, we will talk about it next week. We will decide how much fun it was.
Okay.
But yeah, next week we're going to talk about the mental health necessity of vacationing with your family and taking the time to reset and recharge and strengthen those bonds. So we'll see how it goes, and we'll see how my opinions change about it after this week.
I look forward to that.
But for this week, for today's topic, you know, I had to jump into the conversation about privacy and what's been going on in the media. I mean, you can't ignore it right now because it's the main topic in the news cycle 24/7. I mean, so of course, as always, I have a few thoughts on this. And my thoughts go different directions. The first thought that pops up for me is, wow, you know, that news story certainly trumped everything else we seem to be so concerned about leading up to the issue of privacy and how the government is listening in or collecting data on us. And I wonder what happened to all the things we were concerned about up until this issue of privacy came up. And when I'm listening to the different stories and why I should be concerned, or maybe I shouldn't be concerned, or, you know, should we make a big deal, or why are we making a big deal? The thing that stuck out for me is the picture of the facility. Did you see that picture of the facility that they built?
Yeah, it was just huge.
Multi-millions of dollars, probably billions of dollars. And all I kept thinking is, for a country who keeps saying we have no money to spend and we're in trillions of dollars of debt and we need to, each of us individually, make sacrifices to the quality of life that we're trying to lead because our country is bankrupt or financially insolvent. But then we have money to build this. And that's where my outrage starts, is that there is money and priorities for this kind of operation, but we don't have money set aside or priority set aside to help families in the middle level of our culture, you know, because as we hear in the news, those in the top 1%, we don't have to worry about them because they continue to do just fine. And even those at the very bottom end of our socioeconomic structure, you know, their programs are getting cut, but they're still our programs. But the story that we talk about, but we don't know what to do anything about, is the middle class and all of the ways that the lifestyle and quality of life for the middle class has been harmed over the last 20 years, not just the last 7 years, but the last 20 years, with men's wages stalling out. And now men were the highest amount of jobs that were lost after the recession, and the lack of quality childcare, and just it goes on and on and on. Where does that concern come from? When do we talk about that? And so I keep thinking that, you know, yes, it's important and we should be concerned because the government continues to do things, you know, in secrecy and without seeming to have any concern for the rights of the American public. Yes, that's important. But I sometimes think that these news cycle issues become a lot of noise that prevent the government from having to do anything about those core quality of life issues that we really care about and are concerned about. You know, if there is a news frenzy around something like this, all of a sudden we've forgotten about the things that we were concerned about even a couple months ago. Like, what happened to the conversation about gun control? What happened to the conversation about the big bank collapse that didn't happen, but all the people that made millions and trillions of dollars and were supposed to be prosecuted and sent to jail, that didn't happen. And yet the people in the middle part of our economy absolutely have suffered at the hands. You know, what happened to the conversation about tar sands and climate change? You know, so that's one of the things that's on my mind about the privacy issue, is that I feel like it is another smokescreen that prevents us from dealing with those core issues that concern us on a daily basis. I don't know. What do you think? If you'd like to join our conversation today, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I am Elizabeth Barrett. The phone number to get in on the conversation is 805-781-3875. You can always join us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is The Reluctant Therapist, or send an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Love to hear from you. And this is what we do every week. Brian and I get together. We sit and chat about something that's come up, a topic of concern to us and hopefully to other people or of interest, and then open it up to you to share your story. How do you feel about this issue or other topics that might be going on in your life? How are your relationships? How is your love life? How are you feeling about your own mental health and well-being? The idea behind this conversation with a reluctant therapist was to have a place where we could come together as a community and talk about those things that we struggle with, those things in our lives that maybe prevent us from really having the fullest and healthiest and richest experience that we can. So if you had the opportunity to talk to a therapist, which you do every Tuesday, what would you want to ask about your own mental health and well-being? So again, our number is 805-781-3875. So what do you think, Brian? I mean, am I off base with the privacy conversation?
I'm not sure. I think a lot the news story about our privacy being hacked by the government hits everybody close to home, because everybody has the right to privacy. Mm-hmm. and everybody has secrets that they want to keep their own and have the right to. And so now that everybody knows that every phone conversation's been recorded and stored somewhere, it kind of makes you rethink how you live your life almost.
Mm. Well, and of course, we've seen the facility where they're all stored, so it looks like they have room for a lot of information. Yeah. But then, of course, from a parenting perspective, I'm seeing the privacy issue from a global perspective and then from a family perspective. And I was just reading an article this weekend in the New York Times about cyber parenting and the amount of snooping that parents of teenagers do kind of inadvertently or on purpose of their teen's life on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or however, you know, kids are communicating back and forth with each other. It is much easier to know what goes on in the private life of your teens than when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. Where my parents, I mean, I think my mother's motto was, as long as you don't come home in the back of a police car, we're good. You know, much lower standards for what we were doing once we left the house, because I'm sure she felt like there was nothing she could do. Mm-hmm. But now for parents, we constantly get to monitor the private lives of our children and our teens. And, you know, we might not ever look at our teenager's diary, or, you know, I would never invade my child's privacy in that way to give them their space for their secret thoughts and concerns. But I absolutely am going to look at my daughter's Facebook page, and I'm friends with her and friends with a lot of her friends. And so whatever they're talking about pops up, and they don't seem to monitor themselves or be too concerned. And, you know, I check my daughter's text messages on her phone, not often, but once in a while. She's never really given me a reason to, but she knows that we're going to be looking through, you know, that cyber experience that she has for a couple of reasons. One, to keep her safe, so that she doesn't get into situations that she can't get out of, but also to help her know that she represents our family, not just herself in the world, but our entire family. And so what she says and puts out there represents everyone, you know, her grandparents, her aunts, her uncles, her father and I. So we want our children to know, hey, you feel like you're in this private, alone world, but you're not, because everything you do really impacts all of us. So those are, you know, that to me is a little bit of a conundrum to say, well, I want complete privacy from the government looking at anything I do or my records or monitoring what I'm doing. But on the other hand, I'm going to be checking my daughter's cyber activity, mm-hmm. right? And the government's argument would be, well, we're trying to keep you safe, just like the parents of teens are saying, hey, I'm trying to keep you safe. Mm-hmm. So then I wonder, I don't know where to go with this. Yeah, you can say you're trying to keep us safe, but, you know, from what? So I don't know. What do you think about that? Do you see yourself as someone, you know, couples sometimes will go through each other's emails or look at each other's texts, or, you know, you're sharing email accounts. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you maintain privacy, or do you feel like you need privacy in your relationship?
I personally don't. I leave my computer open, and I trust Emily, and a part of that is that I don't have anything that I feel is incriminating, or that would, I don't have anything that would upset her on my Facebook or in my email or in my thoughts, really.
Well, that's nice. Yeah. Pure of thought is always a great place to be.
So.
But do you see yourself as being someone who would, you know, be a cyber parent, as they're calling it?
Yeah, I'm kind of afraid of what's going to happen when my kid's, you know, 3.5 months now. But once Kieran gets into the teenage years or starts using computers and stuff, that's going to be difficult to try and wrap my mind around. How to make it safe and appropriate for him.
I know, and that's a whole nother topic for another day, or mm-hmm. even today, is that how quickly technology is changing. It is hard to wrap our mind around how things are changing, because the phone that I'm holding up and showing you, mm-hmm. you can't see it on the radio, but it's a dinosaur phone, right, Brian?
Yeah.
Okay. I love this phone, and we just had to upgrade my daughter's phone because hers broke. It's amazing how we have the same phone, and mine looks brand new, and hers looked like it was run over by a truck. So we had to upgrade, and so now she's using a phone that I don't even know if I can get in and check her text messages if I wanted to, because the technology switches. So it's interesting, as parents, you know, what we have to keep doing to actually keep up with the lives of our children and to keep them safe. And do we, you know, do we feel like we need to be kept safe in the greater scheme of things? I mean, is there a reason that you feel comfortable having the government looking through records or being able to read emails? I don't know. Our phone number to get in on the conversation today is 805-781-3875. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're talking about privacy because it is the big story of the news cycle. But from the therapist's perspective, I'm looking at privacy from the mental health and well-being part of it, you know, and also my concern that when the news gets focused on one story and it's all you can find everywhere, I worry that it's more of a smokescreen or just a lot of noise that prevents us from dealing with the issues of our quality of life that we don't ever seem to solve, that we know are a problem, that have been a problem for 100 years. You know, the issue of how do we support mothers and children? How do we help them to have a higher quality of life? How do we help, you know, wage earners, primary wage earners, support their family? And what are the programs that really matter to us as a country? What about climate change and what's going on, you know, with the changes in the weather and how we're going to protect houses and communities? Look at the wildfires and tornadoes that we're having. You know, I get a little frustrated, to be honest, that we don't say anything. We're like an ADHD culture. We have a cultural syndrome of ADHD, that not being able to stick with anything long enough to really make a difference or make anything happen or change. And so to me, as important as the idea of privacy or the issue of privacy is, I'm more concerned that it's just another sparkly object out there that we're going to all chase after. And then it pushes us farther away from dealing with those things that impact our mental health and well-being. And if we don't talk about it, if we don't take care of our quality of life, who's going to? You know, because we truly can't count on our government to, because they're too busy, obviously, building facilities to spy on us or, you know, engaging in covert operations around the world. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this? This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and it's your opportunity to have your say or share your thoughts. Giselle, you're on the air. What's on your mind today? Hi, are you there? Oh, Brian, if you could check again, and we'll try to get back to Giselle. I'm sorry I can't hear you right now, but please.
Oh, I'm here.
Oh, there you are.
Hi, I turned my radio down because I've got you on in three rooms.
That's a little frightening, but okay.
Well, it's my version of stereo, the cheap version, little radios in every room.
So tell me what's on your mind today. What motivated you to call?
Well, the privacy issue is really important, and everybody should be aware of it. And you can't speak about privacy without also considering you know, what should we as Americans expect to have access to? For example, the First Amendment guarantees free speech. But in U.S. Supreme Court cases, it has been said that there is no meaningful free speech without access to copy and inspect government records, because that's the only way that we, the public, in our system, can make sure that the government is doing what it's supposed to do. And at least in theory, we the people are the people who are creating the laws and deciding what the government's powers are and what the extent of their powers are. And I hear a lot of people that have your perspective saying, oh, well, why shouldn't we allow the government to invade our computers, record our conversations? We've got nothing to hide. Innocent people get convicted. You don't have to be guilty to get convicted or to get targeted. You just have to have an unpopular point of view. And the problem I see, and I'm not even going to go to the secret court aspect, like under FISA or that private court that decides whose privacy is going to get invaded, who's going to be ushered, out of their homes without telling their family, sent to a third world country because somebody picked up snippets of electronic recordings and decided that they're a terrorist, threat. But if you have your child's schedule on your computer, what time that child leaves school, what time you pick that child up, what your driver's license number is, what they look like. Somebody can turn that around and just create the most seriously threatening and dangerous situation for your family. So I don't care if the guy that goes into your computer has a crown of thorns on his head and a flowing white robe. We ought to be able to ask him, who is that, What is the reason for such pervasiveness? Why do you need to know who my doctor is?
Right, and I agree with all of that thoughts, Giselle, about, the concern about safety for our family and who is that's listening to our records. But again, I think that we're a little bit naive if we believe that the government hasn't been listening to or following our conversations when they wanted to forever and ever, and that the minute we started logging into computers and putting any sort of personal data into them, we gave up a lot of our privacy just by that mere action of, getting involved with putting our private information online, because it's never going to be that secure. And even before that, the government has been participating in these things. And I guess that's why my question has been, and to you, it's like, is this issue new, or is it just a continuation of an issue that's been, a concern for a long time?
From my point of view, the pervasiveness of the laws, our ability to control and our, the people's input into these new expansive laws have not kept pace with the government's ability to invade our privacy. And when you look at it, even from a local point of view, I would love to see you continue this conversation, because it's fantastic that you've done this on a local level, because when you look at the local power structures and the various agencies and the way they have used these new laws to deny people's access to their own files or to deny access to records which are blatantly public. Like, I've just as an example, I've been threatened by the local, sheriff that in charge of the particular neighborhood that I live in. You know, he's in charge of a little substation there. He didn't like what I was saying or the way I was talking in a public meeting.
And I think that's definitely... I'm sorry, Jill, to cut you off, but I think that I don't want to get too far into the issue of what's going on locally or the privacy issues, because from a therapeutic perspective, my concern is that you are feeling that you're being isolated or pointed out or singled out. And that should be our concern as a community, is how do we look out for each other? You know, how do we talk about openly what's going on and look out for each other's best interests? And I think you brought up a couple great points. One is that it's not just a governmental or in global scale issue of privacy, or do we have access to knowing what's being kept about us or said about us in government, but it's also on a local level. So I'm glad you brought that up, and hopefully we'll continue on with that conversation at another time. I appreciate your call. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about privacy. We're talking about whether or not we should be concerned about who knows what's going on in our lives. But I think the point that I was bringing up earlier is my concern that when we get so focused on this issue and now we're fired up about this issue, what happens to the other issues that we never seem to fully address that impact our quality of life? What do you have to say about that? Hey, Lionel, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Reluctant Therapist. Thank you for your program, and loving the whole format with KCBX.
Thank you.
Interesting programming in the afternoon now, including your program.
We appreciate that.
I was going to say, in terms of mental health, older school people like myself, who is 72, mm-hmm. There's a lot of times I just turn my computer off, and I only go to check it out, at night, at 10 or so at night. And sometimes I leave it off even for a few days, same with my phone. And I think we're just allowing ourselves to become so addicted to electronic stuff mm-hmm. that we need to take an electronic vacation, whether it's for a few hours in a day or leave for the whole weekend. And same goes for being in a car all the time, you know. Let's take a few days to just walk and ride bicycles and things like that, and you'll find that you're a lot healthier, because it's impossible physically to protect your privacy now. It's just the way it is. Everybody, Sears and Roebuck, the government, you name it.
I know. That's kind of the sense I have.
We put it out there electronically, they got it.
I guess that's kind of the way I was feeling, that the minute we started logging into anything, the idea that we were going to keep anything too private had gone away. And I like the idea of being able to turn off, and shut down for hours at a time. And we've talked about it in various occasions on the program about technology and how it's changed in our lives. And, from your old school perspective and my medium old school perspective, we remember a time when we didn't have the technology, and we were still right. And remember how reluctant you would be to give up your social security number or your home address. I remember my dad saying, "Don't give our home address," when someone called on the phone, and this is 40 years ago.
You didn't have an unlisted phone number.
Well, yes, having an unlisted phone number was so important. Like, we've always been fighting to maintain these pieces of privacy. And not to minimize
the problem, though, on a culture and worldwide scale, is giving up everything for the sake of security. Which, of course, there's an old caveat that those who give up all their security will have none.
Yes.
The problem with even a benevolent despot, as Bertrand Russell said, often lose their benevolence, but they never lose their despotism.
Well said.
So you got to be careful. But, well, I mean, don't let, don't. I don't think we can lay down and quake in our boots, over this thing. But in fact, the thing that the guy in Hong Kong revealed wasn't a secret at all. It's been beat to death in the news. Anybody that reads the newspaper, of course, there you go again. I still send snail mail. I still read the newspaper. My granddaughters and I don't think they do. They'll send a card every once in a while for a birthday, but. So, it's an anachronistic technology as far as they're concerned. Even talking on the phone is something that a lot of young people will not do. They'll send text messages all day long.
But if they, yes, so they can avoid the actual conversation. But Lionel, let me ask you though. So given that, you know, we don't want to roll over and not fight the idea of trying to maintain our privacy and not letting the laws be written in such a way that the government can come in and, you know, drag us out of our house or pull us aside. I mean, I understand Giselle's concerns completely.
Well, right now it's just algorithm programs, though. It's not, there's nobody with a little set of headphones in like the old J. Edgar Hoover movies. You know, they can't possibly track all this information, you know, personally. So in some ways, it's the needle in the haystack that they're looking for, and the haystack is getting bigger and bigger and bigger every day.
But that's like our debt, though, Lionel. That's what I'm wondering. Does it concern you at all that we're so fired up and we spent a week talking about this, and yet where did the gun control conversation go and the tar sands conversation go and the debt? Does that concern you?
That's the 24-hour news cycle, you know. We're just getting buried under info. That's why, you know, I mean, it's almost like periodically when you're a kid and you think there's monsters, you know, you cover up, right? You pull your feet in from the edge of the bed and you close that closet door and you cover your head with blankets. There, that'll keep the monsters away. I'll just get under the blankets, you know, and you feel a lot better about it. But it's just a scary deal. But what the answer is, I don't know, because there are really bad people out there who really do want to hurt us. Mm-hmm. Then you don't want to let say we favor the administration that's in there now. Well, this administration is going to change. It's not going to, you know, stay the same. And so there's somebody's got to watch the watchers.
Right. No, and I love that. And I guess that's why we have these conversations, right, is to just kind of
Sure. It's probably going on all over the – but, you know, also it's a cultural thing. We're Americans and we're so used to having our freedom. Everybody in Korea and Israel basically have apps on their phone so that they can track their friends at all times and their friends can track them.
I know.
And they can. That's what that whole lot of the smartphone apps are. I'm looking for a pizza. Okay, here's seven pizza places that are, you know, within walking distance, and two of your friends just went in one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Jimmy and Jane. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so there's information overload, as far as I'm concerned. I don't get it. But the kids are absorbing this stuff 10 times faster than us old folks.
Well, and it's my hope. It's my hope that we can keep the kids engaged enough so that they will want to address the issues of their quality of life that are so important. Because my concern is if we turn them off, right, if we continue throwing up so much noise and doom and gloom and we're being spied on and there's nothing we can do and it's all pretty hopeless, then we're going to have a whole generation that shuts down and feels like, well, there's nothing I can do anyway, so I will just worry about the new app on my phone.
Party and that's it.
And that's but
I really don't know. We'll have to just wait and see. Huh?
Yeah, we'll keep the conversation up.
Definitely, the game is on, and it's changing very swiftly in front of our face. That's kind of the thing that makes the older generation people feel I'm just a cyber nothing.
But of course, I remember, Lionel, that my grandmother is saying to me 25, 30 years ago, oh, I feel bad for your generation because things are changing. You're never going to be the same. And then I felt like my generation's had a wonderful time. And I think, you know, I look at our kids and I'm resisting being my grandmother and saying, oh, I feel sorry for you kids, because I don't. I just want them to stay engaged.
Old curmudgeon,
I can't go there.
And like I say, they want everybody to know where they are and what they're doing, and, you know, at all times. Of course, my granddaughter that's 20 now has matured a tremendous amount. But when she was 14, we went on a trip to Tahoe through Yosemite. She would not stop texting. She only stopped when we get into Yosemite and couldn't get any service. And then as soon as we got in the valley, the service continued. Here we were looking at Yosemite Falls, and my son had to tell her, put that damn phone away. Why? Oh, I'm telling my friends that I'm looking at Yosemite Falls. Look at Yosemite Falls, you know. You don't have to tell your friend every move you make. Well, she's 14 at the time, like I say, and she thought she did, and that was important to her. And so now she's 20, and she's matured a lot. She's much more independent, so I don't think it's going to kill them. But it has to be watched, because this stuff could really be out of control there. And old Big Brother will be, you know, every time we, everywhere, just everywhere. You won't be able to go to the bathroom without.
It's
reporting in to the Big Brother.
That's right. Lionel, I appreciate you.
Let's be equal about this. as big sisters out there.
I appreciate you, Carl Lionel. Have a great day.
Thank you, Reluctant Therapist. You have a great show.
Thanks so much. Keep listening. And this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We are talking about privacy and secrets. And, you know, do we keep anything private anymore? Lionel was talking about how, you know, our kids have a different perspective on what they want to keep private. They want all their friends to know where they are all the time. But Giselle brings up a great, great issue about, you know, when we look at it from a local level, our local governments, our local departments, you know, using the laws in their favor to gain access to individuals that they shouldn't. So it's a lot of things that we need to be concerned about. And then again, I always go back to the mental health piece of it is, you know, are we getting so focused on issues that are not of direct impact on our day-to-day mental health and well-being that we're not paying attention to those things that we need for our well-being, our overall health? And so the other thing that I was thinking about this week when I was thinking about this topic was the issue of secrets and the secrets that we keep. And, you know, I think the idea of, you know, trying to keep our secrets to ourselves in some ways lend itself to us not being as healthy or mentally healthy as we can be. And Brian and I were trying to come up with a list of those things that we try very hard to keep secret. And we came up with sex, right, Brian? We keep our sex life secret. We keep our finances secret for the most part. We don't talk about our fears very regularly. We keep our drug and alcohol habits kind of secret. And our relationships, the quality of our relationships, we try to keep those secret. And I find that interesting that those five things are the top five reasons that people end up in the therapist's office or should end up in the therapist's office, because keeping these secrets, I think, when we don't talk about them, when we keep them to ourselves, somehow lend it to becoming more dark and more disturbing for the individual, to it becoming something that they can't really cope with on their own. So what do you think about that idea of secrets and how, what kind of role they play in our lives? You can join the conversation by calling us at 805-781-3875. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We'll be back to speak to Yolanda and take your calls.
That number again to call in and speak with Elizabeth, the Reluctant Therapist, is 781-3875. That's area code 805-781-3875. Here's a highlight from the KCBX Community Calendar. There are lots of hikes offered by the Morro Bay Museum of Natural History. On Friday, they walk Islay Creek and the Coon Creek Burn in Montana de Oro State Park. Then next Tuesday, it's the Salt Flats near the state park. For all the details, go to the community calendar at kcbx.org. The number again to call and speak with a Reluctant Therapist is 781-3875.
And if you'd like to join the conversation but don't want to come on the air, you're always welcome to call in and give Brian your question or comment, and he'll share it with us. Or you can send us an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can find us on our Facebook page, because we have no secrets here. Our Facebook page is The Reluctant Therapist. We look forward to continuing the conversation on the air and off the air as well. And if you'd like to listen to previous shows, we do have all of our previous shows up at kcbx.org under the Program Archives tab, so you can catch up with segments that way. So we're talking about privacy, and I just brought up the idea of secrets and those things that we keep secret in our lives, like sex and our finances and our fears and our drug and alcohol habits and our relationships and how they're going. Those things that we keep secret and don't want to tell other people for fear of them thinking less of us or that we're not normal. Those secrets that we keep tend to cause us to become mentally unhealthy, can really cause disturbances in our lives. So what do you think about that? Hey, Yolanda, thanks for waiting. You're on the air with a Reluctant Therapist.
Oh, hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I not only listen to you, but I listen to Democracy Now!
Oh, great.
And regarding the latest brouhaha, on Democracy Now!, they've interviewed a man named William Binney, who was with the NSA for 45 years and who developed in-house for a few million dollars a program that would enable the NSA to reach people who were potentially suspicious. You know, a limited number of people, excluding the entire rest of the population of the United States. And then another person became head of the NSA and disagreed with that and said that they should just have, it would be easier if NSA had access to the entire population, and then they could, as you said, find a needle in a haystack. So a very expensive program was put in place, which was farmed out to large companies, private firms, with thousands of employees, and that's where we are now.
So tell me how does this strike you then, Yolanda? Does this concern you, or is this something that...
It concerns me because you and I and every citizen of the United States is a potential suspect. We're under suspicion. We are guilty unless somebody, you know, we're potentially guilty of something.
So what are we going to do about it?
The only thing that we can do is write snail mail letters. And that takes time. But every letter, written letter, we can telephone too, but every written letter has to be read by someone, and they say it's worth 100 or more citizens. Each letter is worth, you know, if somebody takes the time to letter, that represents 100 other people at least.
Well, then I think that's a great word of wisdom, that if you care about this issue, if it's something that concerns you like it does for Yolanda, that the agencies now have free rein to create suspicion regarding any behavior that we have, then to write a snail mail letter, which Lionel was just talking about, might be going the way of the dinosaur, but still has a lot of impact because it takes time to sit down and to write a letter and to go online and find out who your representatives are and to take a minute or two just to say, hey, this concerns me. You know, that we have to watch the watchers, as Lionel also said. So I appreciate, Yolanda, you taking the time to call in and share your thoughts on this. And I can hear it almost sounds like a generational thing, that this privacy issue almost has a greater impact to those I think are a little older and maybe have more life experience with the issue of our government and what they're spying on or what they're trying to listen to. I don't know. Thanks for your call, Yolanda. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're talking about privacy. I brought up the issue of secrets and what kind of secrets that we keep in our life and how do they affect our mental health and well-being. You know, when we don't talk about our feelings, maybe what's going on financially in our life, or if we don't talk about our relationships and the health and quality of our relationships, especially with something like Facebook, where it's easy to see that everyone, or it looks like on the surface, everyone's having perfect relationships, it's easy to think that your relationship probably doesn't measure up, and so there's something wrong with you, and then you become more disgruntled, and you wonder why it's not healthy, and maybe I should leave the relationship. You know, it's those things that we keep secret quite often are the things that lead us to really get into trouble in our life. And what do you think about that? I invite you to call in with your thoughts on this or any other topic regarding your relationships or well-being. The number is 805-781-3875. And Nikki, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Yeah, what's coming up for me is I just recently took a position with a new healthcare organization, and what I'm struck by, having gone through an orientation process that was pretty long and arduous, is that there's all this in my profession and in healthcare emphasis on HIPAA and the privacy of our medical information and our medical records, et cetera. But it seems to me like there's a seemingly paradox here because to me, the information about my personal life, my, you know, where I shop, who I subscribe to, newsletters, what news I read or what television I watch, et cetera, is just as, to me, important as is, you know, what health history I might have or what my cholesterol is.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to be that there's just this real paradox or disconnect. Because I'm by profession required to keep my patient's information private, and I'm, you know, obligated to do that. But there's such an overemphasis in that as opposed to other things that I think are just as personal and should be private or anonymous that are clearly not. There's just a real kind of disconnect, or it's very odd to me that as a culture we've come to this point where there seems to be this paradox about what's important, what should be private and personal, and what's not.
I know you bring up a great point, because it's interesting in my profession, clearly under, you know, the ethics of my profession, that I keep everything private, and the conversations that I have and what people tell me, I hold those secrets, which is one of the things I find most powerful about talk therapy, is that it gives people the opportunity to come in and share these secrets, these things that we're concerned about, wondering if we're normal, the way we feel about our relationships, normal the way we feel about our sex life, and how we're doing it and who we're doing it with, and, you know, talking about money. I mean, it's very important to have a place to go to share these thoughts and feelings, and know that these secrets are being held and witnessed by someone who's going to protect your privacy. But at the same time, being able to tell someone your secrets unburdens you of feeling alone and isolated. And so that reminds me, Nikki, thank you for calling in, the power in what I can do, or we can do in our profession as therapists, that's very helpful. You know, I think my reluctance, and why the reluctant therapist is my theme, is my concern is that we've lost a lot of talk therapy's power, because people are coming in to share their story, to have their stories witnessed. And quite often these secrets, these behaviors, these concerns that people have are oftentimes pathologized. And then all of a sudden we're looking at medications, or, you know, ways that we have to fix people instead of actually normalizing their behavior so that the client can feel strong and go off and carry on. And I think that's what's really hindered the profession of talk therapy in the last 10, 15 years, is that instead of just being there to hold people's stories so that they can go out in the world and feel like they've been heard, we're pathologizing a lot of our normal experience. And I think that gets us into trouble. I don't know. What are your thoughts? If you'd like to join the conversation, 805-781-3875. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And Lorraine, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. I just have a quick comment. Is it me, or is this whole topic just make everybody paranoid?
It brings up a lot of, I can feel the strong emotions in people's voices as they're calling. I don't know. You probably hear that too.
Yeah, I do. And I just, oh gosh, I don't like that everybody is all of a sudden so paranoid about their life. And that can't be productive or helpful to anybody.
So tell me how you feel about secrets and privacy in your life.
I'm a pretty open person, and so I really don't have a whole lot of secrets that I feel I have to keep from people. If they want to know about them, I really don't care if they know about them. Mm-hmm. It's I don't have anything to hide. So, I think there's an appropriate place to talk about things, but and appropriate people to talk to these about, but I'm not going to worry if somebody's going to be getting into my phone records. I don't care.
Can I ask you how old you are, Lorraine?
61.
Oh, okay. Well, then you blew my theory. Because my theory was that it was more of a generation. You have a very young voice, by the way.
Oh, well, I guess, thank you.
Very youthful. But my theory was that it was a generational thing, that I know, you know, my father's generation, he's 75, and Lionel called in, are concerned about the more global perspective. It's like, hey, once we start opening the door and rolling over and saying, sure, check whatever you want out, then are we going to have people showing up at our door and taking things away, or, you know, arresting us on suspicion? What if someone sends me an email or, you know, a picture or something that is on my computer and then is judged as inappropriate, right? And all of a sudden my kids are being taken away. That concerns me too.
And I just don't have the fear that we're heading in that direction at all. I think there's parts of it that sound a little scary, but I don't think that we're to that point at all.
Well, and I don't know. I kind of go both ways with this issue. I think the part for me that I brought up earlier that is my concern is that if we get people continuously living in the state of paranoia and fear about their lives or secrets, then people aren't going to have the energy to talk about the things that really matter to them on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I totally agree with that.
Right?
There are stuff that we can take care of. Maybe some of the secrecy stuff we can't take care of, but there's other things that we can put our energy in.
Right, and I think we wipe out our populace interest in dealing with wages or childcare or relationships, right? Or how we're going to look after the elderly. You know, there's real life topics that we need our government agencies and each other as a community to be talking about, because our quality of life depends on it. And that's always my fear, is that if we get completely caught up in thinking that, you know, these doomsday thoughts about our government and privacy and who's listening to who, then that just prevents us from dealing with the day-to-day stuff that maybe because I'm a therapist, I lean towards.
I've always had the feeling that our government has a lot of secrets from us.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I, you know, the snooping on us doesn't surprise me one bit. Not one bit. So.
And maybe that's sad in itself, right?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, thank you for letting me talk.
I appreciate you calling in, Lorraine. Okay. Enjoy your day.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
And this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and Brian is here fielding your phone calls. If you'd like to get in on the topic, 805-781-3875 is the number to call. You can also find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. I say us, Brian, as if you're in there with me writing on the wall, which you're welcome to anytime.
All right. Thank you.
And it's funny, talking about Facebook pages, my private personal Facebook page, I share with my father.
Mm-hmm.
So I have my own watcher of my secrets, you know, and it's a funny thing. I have my own prism experience happening in my life, and kind of happily so, because my dad, of course, would never have his own Facebook page because that would invade his privacy. But he really loves having access to my Facebook page and what's going on in my life and with my friends. And so it's kind of a funny relationship for us. And it's almost like going back to high school. Although, as I mentioned earlier, my parents really gave us a lot of free rein as teens, much different than now, where we as parents have this cyber ability to stalk our children and what's going on in their lives, and, you know, check in on their phone records and check in on their Facebook page. And so I wonder, you know, I know there's a difference, but isn't there some sort of ironic dance that we do when we talk about our government getting into our privacy and knowing what we're watching on TV, and yet we as parents feel that it's our duty and our right to check in on our children's activities, and we're trying to keep them safe. And as for my child, I always tell her, you know, what you post on Facebook or what you send in emails or what you do in public in general reflects on our family. And that's a big issue for us, you know, that we're not just living isolated and solo in the world, that our behaviors and how we act reflect who we are as a family and not just us individually. I don't know. What do you think about that? The number to get on the conversation again is 805-781-3875. Hey, Mark, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi there. You know, we're talking about secrecy and stuff, and the arguments for and against, and a lot of people's opinions kind of rely on what their opinion of our government is, and, mm-hmm. and what they think they're doing, and how much they believe what our government's saying. Mm-hmm. And before I get to my main point, if I could make an initial point, if you remember the movie The Matrix.
Yes.
There were two pills that people could take, the blue pill and the red pill. And if you took the blue pill, you got to live in a nice dream world. But if you took the red pill, you got the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that's a very apt metaphor for the way a lot of people look at a lot of things in life, and one of those being our government. And I will voice the hypothesis that really most people are too afraid to look at what our government's doing and take that red pill. It just takes too much inner strength. There's too much fear. And I know this firsthand because of a group that I've been involved with. And our group has shown that what our government has said violates the laws of physics. And I'm referring to 9/11. And I'm referring in particular to a graph of in a report by NIST, the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, on page 46, figure 3-15. And that figure shows the downward velocity of World Trade Center Building 7 during its collapse. Now, most people don't even know about World Trade Center Building 7, but that was the third building that came down on 9/11.
Mark, are you going to conspiracy theorist me? Because it's...
See, this is, you just took the blue pill. You don't want to hear what I have to say because you're unable to hear the truth.
No, I absolutely want to hear the truth. But here's my concern, because I'm the conversation with a reluctant therapist, and I live in the realm of more of the therapeutic piece of it. I could talk forever about this topic, but it's a little far afield from what I'm trying to always kind of draw us back to, is how do we take care of each other's mental health and well-being, given that there are all of these ways that the government is snowing us on a regular basis, given that...
That's precisely why I brought up the point about the red pill and the blue pill and people's ability to handle the truth.
Absolutely.
It absolutely gets to a mental health question here. And the fact that you are directing the phone conversation away from what I wanted to say is I could have predicted that in a heartbeat when I first started this call.
Well, I'm sorry.
So I'll go ahead and let you bail. I'm not going to try and force. One thing I've learned about this is you cannot tell anybody anything they don't want to hear. I'll let you bail.
I am not bailing. I hope you can understand that, you know, I'm trying to stay in the vein of the topic of the show. And it's interesting because as a therapist, you know, the primary work of my world is to help people come to grips as best they can with what is real in their world to them and to cope with that reality. And I think one of the best points you made is that sometimes what is real is so overwhelming that we're not even capable of coping with it. And I'm sorry that this wasn't a great forum to talk about that issue about the trade towers in a more lengthy way, and I apologize for that. But I do want to keep focused on the idea that we're trying to help each other as a community do the best we can on a regular basis to deal with those things that we can do something about, which is to look out for each other. So, Mark, I hope you won't give up on the show. Maybe we'll find another way to have this conversation. I appreciate you taking the time to call. Hey, Lauren, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi, good afternoon. This is the first time I've heard your show before, and I really enjoy it, so thank you.
I'm glad you called.
But I thought I'd give a ring since I'm 25. I'm younger than it seems like some of the other callers, but you had expressed kind of a mulling theory that it's more the older generations that have more concern right now about security and privacy and sort of how much invasion is too much. But I just wanted to voice that I agree. I guess I have a fear of just that. You know, how far is too far? I still remember the days of when you could go through security to pick somebody up, you know, at the airport. And so it's definitely a fear of mine and for future generations on where this is going and when does it become out of control.
So does it make you change your day-to-day behaviors at all, this concern, you know, to try to protect your privacy?
I'm probably a more private person by nature, and that was another thing. I wouldn't say that I have anything to hide by any standards, but I certainly don't feel comfortable expressing or sharing things with everybody or at every time. It has certainly affected the way that I interact through the cyber network. I mean, I do connect through some social networks, but not as many as many of my peers. And I find that it blurs so many lines nowadays. It's sort of recreating how we interact with one another. For example, I've had supervisors at jobs try to friend me on Facebook, and they want to know who I'm dating and where I'm traveling, and I feel that that's crossing a line between, you know, work and private life. That it's just another, what I always say, aspect of the whole privacy security issue.
Yeah, you know what? That's a great point, because I know that we've talked about before, when students are applying to colleges now, quite often the admissions officers might see what the kids are posting on Facebook or when you're applying for jobs. And so it is very hard to hide anything that goes on in our life. And I'm glad at 25 that you are thinking about these things, because it can become very Orwellian very quickly. And I think if we don't have the knowledge, if the knowledge about how bad things can get with the government spying or dragging people out of their homes, if your generation becomes complacent, then we could get in a lot of trouble. And I am glad you found the show, Lauren, and I appreciate you taking the time to call.
Yeah, no, thank you so much.
Have a great day.
You too.
And this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Sue, you get the last word today. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. I just want to thank you for being the ultimate diplomat. The way you help people stay on track, which is very important, you know, to your program, is wonderful. You do it very well, and you're very kind in the way that you do it.
I hope so. I want this to be a community experience that people of all opinions can feel like they can call in and share as best as they can.
Absolutely. Your comment a little earlier about emotional issues being maybe overly diagnosed. Mm-hmm. As illnesses, as a way to get drugs into the picture. And, mm-hmm. you know, talking about conspiracy theories, as a widow, this is something that I've noticed on my widow's forums. People, in the first several months, they're so distraught that their regular family physicians are putting them on all kinds of drugs and sleep aids like Ambien, when it's really diet that could help them the most, mm-hmm. because they're, you know, they've just totally stopped all normal patterns of eating and sleeping and handling things.
They're grieving.
Exactly. And that's what grief is all about, is experiencing it, not burying it.
Oh, absolutely.
But I really think you hit the nail on the head there with the, that my conspiracy theory, if you want to call it that, mm-hmm. is that the drug companies have a vested interest in getting different, you know, I'm going to call them an emotional issue. Grief is an emotional issue to me.
Yes.
It's not anywhere near a mental illness.
No.
But I think the latest gathering of psychiatrists voted or discussed labeling anything more than 6 months of grief. If you're not over your grief in 6 months, it's now something it's clinically called complicated grief, and
yes.
it becomes something that can be covered by, you know, insurance companies and drug coverage and everything else. So they're turning it into an illness when it really is not an illness. It's just a life stage.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, Sue, because we're going to continue with this conversation throughout the summer as the new DSM-5 is coming out. So I hope you'll stay with the program and you'll call in with your thoughts when that comes up. And I appreciate you taking the time to call. I'm sorry I have to cut you off a little bit, because we have reached the end of our hour today. This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We can continue this. Mark, you can join us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I look forward to speaking to you again next week. Brian, thank you for taking the calls. And thank you all for listening and supporting our local public radio, KCBX.